Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Room & Board. And along with having tons of great furniture, they have three words for you. Free design services. They'll help you tackle any project of any size with zero pressure to buy. You can learn more at roomandboard.com/YHL. That's room, ANDBOARD.com/YHL.
I'm Chad.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're diving into a debate over kitchen islands, sharing a new trick for picking paint colors, and guess what? We're also calling John's online doppelganger Chad to hear his side of the story.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beach House Kitchen has a backsplash.
Ooh, ooh. It's my favorite podcast sound.
I feel like 9 out of 10 podcasts start with that.
It's just an excited sound I make when I think about shiny tile and like many, many square feet of it. It like coats three sections of the kitchen. And they're big sections. Like we went into this thinking might take us 5 days, might take us a while to get the materials. So we weren't even sure we'd start it when we went out there.
Yeah, I think last time we talked about it on the podcast, I wasn't even sure it was going to get started, let alone done. Although I should say it's not technically done yet. It's not grouted. We still have to add like some pencil at the top, but the main portion of the tile is up because we kind of scrambled right before we left for that trip a few weeks ago to buy our tile. I shoved the wet saw into the back of the car along with all of our luggage and beach stuff. And so we made it happen. And it turned out to be relatively straightforward. I think it took us about a day and a half to do it.
Yeah, not even 2 full days. I really had in my brain, like, this will be every single day. We'll be so sweaty and dying. But that's because I'm having flashbacks to when we tiled the beach house without air conditioning because the HVAC system had not yet been put in. And that took forever. But realistically, that was 3 bathrooms. And it was floors, showers, oh, yeah. Shower pans. Like, we were tiling everything.
This was nothing in comparison. I did comment at one point that it is nice to be doing this with AC for once.
Totally.
The thing I wanted to point out that I was reminded with this project is that planning is a big part of starting a tile job, like figuring out where you start your tiles, making sure everything's level. Like that is a big part of setting up your job for success. And I feel like it gets glazed over a lot when we talk about these projects because you jump to like mixing the thin set and pushing the tiles on and grouting and all that stuff. But I spend a lot of time double checking how our pattern is going to fit on the wall so that you have things looking nice and centered and you don't have like a sliver of a tile on one end. And you know, just take some measuring and some math. It's not like very complicated to do. You can even simply lay things out, like literally put them on the counter to see how they line up and how they fall against the moldings or whatever. But this particular project had an added challenge that it was a very old house. The wall that we were tiling right behind the stove is one of the original framed walls. Like that was not reframed. And as we've talked about from time to time, this house, as much as we have done to it, is still, you know, a little bit askew in parts. The original floor in that part of the house dipped about 12 inches from the front to the back. Like there was a pretty severe slope.
When we bought it.
Yeah, when we bought it. And our contractor, Sean, was able to jack it up a lot, but it's still not perfectly level. Like the kitchen still has a very slight slope, which we noticed as we were installing the cabinets, because when you put cabinets in, you want them to be very level and you want everything to look level. But it was very hard to do because it would have meant like having a giant toe kick on one end.
Right. You don't want to draw attention to it. I feel like we need to clarify. The house is not like still slowly sinking or settling.
No.
It has been like completely secured. It's just that there's sort of like a cap to how far you can jack something up. So you can get it as square as possible. But sometimes if you jack something further, it makes the other corner unsquare
yeah.
or puts the whole house on kind of a tweak. So if you put like T-squares in places, you're like, oh, this house is 100 years old. Like
yeah.
you can tell.
Well, and like one of the doorways around the pantry that we were tiling around is one of the original doorways. So it's not perfectly square either. So Sherry and I, when we go into these things, our general gut check is, does it look good to the eye? So even if it's not perfectly level, like the bubble on your level is not precisely in the middle, as long as it looks level relative to the other objects in the room, then that's good for us.
Right. Well, what I was going to say is it's not that we stop short of making it level on the bubble. It's that sometimes if you follow the bubble, it looks unlevel.
Right.
So you have to trust your eye more than the bubble because your eye is what's going to be looking at it all the time. You're not going to have a level glued to your wall.
Right.
People will see it with their eyes and they will decide that looks crooked
yeah.
or board that looks straight.
The final judgment will be people's human eyes looking at this.
Their special eyes if they're John.
Well, the thing we discovered in doing this wall also has like a little bit of a bow in the middle. And so at one point the tiles like kind of look like they warp out. And so it looks like the lines aren't level. And it was driving me nuts at one point because I really, really wanted this to look perfect and precise. But I finally at some point just had to say, you know what? It's an old house. I'm doing the best I can. It looks pretty darn good to the eye, even if it's not absolutely perfect. And I just kind of like plowed ahead.
I think it looks great. It's if you stand in one specific spot and you stare at one specific spot, which you know only John and his special eyes even notice. Like tons of people have visited us, including Sean the contractor. And he didn't even notice it until I pointed it out, had him stand in a special spot and turn his head a certain way. So like this is just John being a little bit neurotic.
You're always the pickiest about your own work. So.
Right. Well, you see the flaws because you were staring at those lines for 1,000 hours yeah. And nobody else
has. Like, I thought I paid attention to that part. And then there is like slightly off.
I mean, it looks perfect to me. You guys have seen it in video on Insta stories. Did anyone, and not even a single person, commented or said anything?
I think I hear some hands raising out there.
No. If anyone noticed anything weird about the backsplash, comment on Insta stories.
No, don't tell me.
I'm just telling you, nobody did.
It's going to make it worse. Don't just keep it to yourself, everyone.
Okay, John does not want to hear, but I'm telling you, I heard from no one. And people will literally say like, hey, is that straight? Hey, is that wrong? Like, people are not shy about
that. And I will say no, because it's an old house. I did my darndest. The thing we do have to finish, though, still, at least at the time of this recording, is a little like pencil or bullnose at the top. We had bought some bullnose and then we held it up. We weren't sure it was the right proportion, so we wanted to hunt down something else. And of course, there's not really like a giant tile store in Cape Charles. So we did take one day trip when we were there that week installing the backsplash across the bridge. This is that 17-mile long bridge. That's an $18 toll to get across.
I thought it was 15, but then you say 18.
I think it's 15 one way and $3 to come back. As long as you come back within 24 hours of your first trip.
Right. And everyone who's like, oh my gosh, every time you go there, do you pay that? Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
But we're working on a rental property, so it's a write-off. So it's not free at all, but at least it feels like a business expense is better than just $18, just like throwing it out of the car into the water.
Yeah. Well, we were excited because there was a Floor and Decor, which is where we had gotten the original tile, right across the bridge in Virginia Beach. And so we're like, great, we'll go. We know it will be the same color because, you know, subway tile whites can be different. And we roll up to this store, excited to go pick out our pencil or new bullnose or whatever. And the store was closed because the grand opening was the very next day.
Legitimately, the store was built. It was stocked with tile. It was opening tomorrow.
Yes, it showed up on my Google Maps, said it was open, but it was not.
It was not. And the next day, had we done the day trip the next day, we could have gotten it. But we were like, we're not doing that day trip again, a day later.
And it wasn't wasted. We ran some other errands at the Target. We took the kids to see Incredibles 2. It was a good day otherwise, but we still have that sort of hanging part of the project. And of course, grouting to still do.
It's a hanging Chad.
We'll
get to Chad later, guys. Hold steady if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because I want to talk about kitchens a little bit more because I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal fairly recently entitled Why Kitchen Islands Are Ruining America's Kitchens, which is a bold statement.
Right. You're like, gasp.
Yes, because I quite like our island here and the one at the beach house.
Yeah.
So this drew me in. I had to find out why this author was so anti-island.
I like all islands. Tropical, kitchen, all of them are good. What's her reasoning against islands?
Well, the point she kind of lays out, which I kind of get, and you guys will have to read the article yourself to fully understand it. I will put a link in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. But she says, and I quote, "When I remodeled recently, I wanted an airy kitchen with white tiled walls, a big window over the sink, and a human scale table, the kind where my grandmother sat when she chopped onions and where families gathered before the whole world turned into something that looks like a sports bar." And I think that is the sentence that captures her sort of beef with islands, is that rather than having this nice kind of casual table, you have this bar where people all sit. I mean, we've complained a little bit, I think even on the podcast, about how we don't like our own habit of eating most of our dinners at our island because we all like sit in a row staring at nothing instead of facing one another at an actual table.
Right. Well, now that the kids are kind of older and we can have conversations, albeit children conversations, but still conversations, we noticed when we went on spring break, we all sat at a table and it was nice to like see each other's faces instead of all stare straight ahead. But I would counter that to say that every island looks like a sports bar, like our island is white with a top that's white. So it doesn't look like a sports bar.
Well, I think the bar is the operative word here. She's saying that she kind of longs for a less complicated kitchen. Like back in the days where kitchens were not these huge spaces that you had this kind of giant hulking monolith of cabinets in the middle of the room.
Right.
And, you know, she even says later, kids are better off doing homework at a table than banging their knees against an island. And cooks of an average height get more leverage rolling dough at like a 30-inch table than a 36-inch high island.
Nobody bangs their knees at our island. We have a 12-inch overhang. Guys listening, 12 inches is the perfect overhang for an island. Nobody bangs their knees.
Well, I mean, you can't like kick your feet casually like children like to do without, you know, banging it. I think she's just saying she likes the idea of a table more than an island.
I also love an old table in the middle of a kitchen. I love it. It just makes no sense if I have a connected dining room because then I have two tables right next to each other.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the island for giving me an alternate function that I don't have. Instead of creating this situation where I have a table surrounded by six chairs right next to or six steps away from a table surrounded by six chairs.
Well, and I think that's why you see this trend coming back where you are seeing tables instead of islands in some places. And they're not necessarily repeated tables like you were saying.
Right. I think people are eliminating the formal dining room and they're putting a big, gorgeous, old, beat-up table in the middle of the kitchen with tons of chairs, maybe even mismatched chairs. And you know what? I freaking love it.
I think for a long time, an island was a goal for us. This is our first kitchen that has fit one.
And right.
And it was almost like we finally achieved something we have been working for.
We made it, guys.
Because often an island becomes like added workspace or added storage. And if you have a small kitchen, even a small island can add so much more function.
Right, right. Well, I think we all watch those TV shows that are like, I had this cramped kitchen, blah, blah, blah. And then what do they do on the show? They open it up, they take down a wall, and they add an island. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, an island. And so we were like, we want an island. Guess what? We got an island. We like the island.
An architect in the article says that one reason they've become so popular is because of open concept. It becomes a way to delineate kitchens from the spaces that they open up to. And I think in the beach house, we used it as a very functional solution because we did not have enough wall space to put our sink there.
Or our dishwasher.
Right. So we needed the island to put those things in there. And I actually really, really like having the sink in the island. I didn't think I would like that. That's why we didn't do it here at home. But now I'm finding having it there means I actually get to face the family while you're doing dishes or whatever. Like if the kids are sitting in those bar stools, I'm actually looking at them instead of having my back to them like we do here at our home kitchen.
Right. I've noticed that too. I was actually telling John, like I really thought I wouldn't like a sink in an island and we worried it was too small and there wouldn't be like eating room behind it. But there's plenty of room for a plate and a cup. And like we have had kids have like a casual lunch at the island and I'm working at the sink, even if I'm like cutting flowers there. But I feel like the point is, hear me when I say this. John touched on it for a second, but I really want it to sink into your brains. Open your mouth so I can speak directly into your mouth.
Gosh.
When you are at an island with a sink in it, you are not staring at the wall. And even if the wall has a window and it's beautiful and you're looking outside, your back is to everyone else in any other zone. If they're in the adjoined living room, your back is to them. If they're in the dining room that's nearby, your back is to them. Like you are facing the exterior wall of the house.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't change it in our kitchen. I just really expected to not like it and I liked it. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, I'm curious if anyone listening has similar passionate feelings about islands, either positive or negative. So I think this is a great opportunity to throw a poll into the show notes. So if you go to younghouselove.com/podcast, not only can you read this whole article from the Wall Street Journal, you can weigh in on whether you think islands are ruining America's kitchens or not.
And I will say one thing I got a message about recently that relates to this conversation is someone was saying, help, I have one of those two-tiered islands, which are getting to be dated, which I do agree. You know, those islands that have like bar height and counter height. And she said, the only place I can put my sink is in this island. But a friend of mine keeps saying, keep the bar height because it hides the dishes in the sink. You don't want your sink to be open for everyone to see. And I wrote back and I said, no, put the sink in the island without the bar height. I'm telling you, you'll like it so much better. Just get a nice deep sink. We have a nice deep sink at the beach house. 0% of the time am I bothered that there are dishes in the sink, even if we're sitting at the island doing a project.
I would say my solution is just do your dishes.
Yeah, I just thought there's no reason that you should keep something that you even recognize as being dated just because it's camouflage or it hides something.
Yeah.
I think you definitely should go with the more modern version of it and then splurge for like a 12-inch sink, like something real deep. You won't even see it when you're sitting at the island.
Well, I think that split top where you have bar height stools, not counter height stools, definitely contributes to what the writer was saying about it feeling like a sports bar. So when you have those extra high stools, it can feel much more like you're teetering. We have just counter height stools here, and they don't honestly seem that much worse than a regular chair.
Right. No, and we have them at the beach house. And everyone's like, oh, are your kids steady? Yeah, get four-legged stools. We've sat on three-legged stools at restaurants and bars, and John and I ourselves have fallen off them. So as long as you get a nice sturdy stool and it's counter height, it's not that much different from a table chair.
Anyways, go to the show notes, take the poll. And now, Sherry, we may get to the section that you have been looking forward to all episode.
Guys, this episode is a very special one because we have none other than Chad, John's Instagram doppelganger. He's actually an underwear model. People kept DMing me on Instagram and saying, why aren't you talking about John being an underwear model? And they'd send a picture, and the underwear, which didn't help, was called Tommy John. And so everyone's like, it's obviously John.
Spoiler, it was not me.
It was not John, you guys. And I kept saying, people were like, ha ha ha, yeah, right. But it escalated. And then someone somehow found him on Instagram. And he's a guy named Chad Rohde. And the crazier turn of events is not only is he an underwear model and an everything else model because he keeps popping up everywhere, but he builds stuff. He's a builder. He and his dad, Travis, own a company in Texas, and they renovate old homes and build new constructions and even build furniture. It's a crazy, funny comparison. To actually go on the journey, I feel like you should go to the show notes and click the link because there's one archived Insta story that will take you through the like, haha, this guy modeling underwear looks like John, through the we found him, his name's Chad. And then Chad starts trolling us, which is really funny. He starts posing for pictures looking just like John, like even wearing the same outfit, holding the same piece of paper, same pose, same sneakers. It's so hilarious.
A much more modelly pose than I was able to pull off, I will say.
I mean, it's like the well-lit, modeled version of John's pose.
The more like six-packed version. But yeah, you should go to the show notes, maybe even pause this and look before you hear this interview because you must understand the similarities before you dive into this conversation.
Right. And everyone's dying to know if he sounds like John. So I can't wait to get him on the phone and see. So we're just going to give him and his dad a call.
Hey.
Chad.
That's a hi.
Hi, Travis.
What's up, guys?
I knew you wouldn't sound exactly like him. I thought you might be like the twangy version.
You can now be Texas John in addition to being, what, not John and underwear John. I think are all the nicknames you've earned over the last couple months.
Yeah. This last 5 days has been a little nuts.
We're sorry you got sucked into this thing.
I know, the vortex.
It's hilarious. You know, I had no clue what was going on, obviously.
I really didn't know what was going on for a long time. Sherry manages our Instagram account, so this was like all her, and I barely knew what was happening.
Oh, yeah. I started getting messages, I guess, right away after somebody saw it. And they were like, hey, you got to check out Young House Love, their Instagram stories. And I was like, what does this have to do with me? You know? And then I saw a picture with me selling a grill, and I was like, what's that on here for, you know? And then, you know, just followed along and then started realizing what was going on. And because my account for a long time has been private, just up until, I guess, a month or two ago. So I don't know if somebody found me because then it's not private anymore or what. But anyways, yeah, it's been great fun. And all the messages that I've received and everything have been so great. And they've kept me up a little bit late at night replying back and answering. But it's been a lot of fun.
We very much appreciate you being a good sport about it. It is kind of funny. I will say over the years of us blogging, we've been blogging for about 11 years. And I've been compared to various people, like they've seen someone like in a band that looked like me, or at one point someone thought I looked like the nerdy guy from the PetSmart commercials. So like, I will take the underwear model comparison. Like, this is probably the most flattering one that I've had.
There you go, John. You got to run with that.
And then just the funny thing, and the reason why we've got your dad, Travis, here, the fact that you guys work in the same sort of industry of home construction and carpentry and building is just kind of like a hilarious, you know, side part of this whole story.
Yeah, obviously the similarities. And even, you know, I watched the story when you were talking to John. He's sitting on the couch. He's like, I don't really feel like I look like this guy. And, you know, I mean, looking at the photos, I'm like, man, there's some similarities there, you know, I mean, profile maybe. But I mean, understanding John too, it's like, man, I don't know if this guy really looks like me or not. You know?
So, I feel the same way. It's like you look at your own face every day. So I see the differences. This is probably the most we've been alike, Chad. We agree on this. Right. I see in you sort of my unrealized potential. I could be a professional carpenter. I could not have a dad bod. But yet I just have not quite achieved that.
When I shared the video of me talking to John on the couch, like 50 people immediately DM'd me and said, stop joking. That's Chad. You've gotten Chad to your couch and he's sitting there talking to you. And I'm like, I swear to you, that's John.
I don't know how you keep up with all this. It's got to be just insanity on your end to get flooded with comments and DMs. And I mean, seriously, just nonstop.
Well, my phone was on vibrate and John was like, what? Is someone calling you? Because it was like the DMs were flying so fast. And I was like, the Chad John thing has just reached a new level. Like people are calling this the internet crossover of the summer. Like everyone loves John and Chad.
Well, now that we've got you both on the phone, why don't we talk a little bit about what you do professionally besides the modeling, Chad? Because I think some of our listeners would like to hear that aspect as well. So if we understand correctly, you guys work together in a construction business. And Travis, you have been doing this for decades, right?
Yeah, I took building trades in high school. And then right out of high school, I went to work for a commercial cabinet company. And yeah, pretty much kind of ran with it from there. I've worked as a superintendent. I framed, I did concrete, I did all the grunt work and kind of worked my way up to new construction and remodels. And then we've done a lot of fixtures and stuff for Starbucks.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's cool. Like building cabinetry and furniture?
Yeah, the furniture, a lot of the tables, their community tables. And
do you guys have Starbucks Reserve where you are?
Oh, no, I've never even heard of that.
That sounds like a fancy Texas thing.
Right. Well, it's just like I don't know, they have higher-end coffee or something like that. But there's specialty stores at certain locations, and we've done a lot of their custom community tables. And like the big, long tables everybody sits at, whether it's with some metal or wood, a lot of different styles, different variations. We got in with an architect. We actually worked in a couple restaurants here in Dallas. He loved our work, loved the style. So working with architects and designers, that's what I end up doing at the shop. And figuring out how to build stuff, whereas my dad's the jefe on the site, you know, but he's not afraid to get his hands dirty.
And how long have you guys worked together?
About 18 years.
How long have you known each other?
Man, that's even,
about 15 years.
Yeah. We really got to know each other once we started working together. I started modeling right out of high school.
John as well. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what's weird? John's sister is a professional model and has modeled since high school.
Is that right?
And she looks just like him with hair. Like,
I don't think that's true. That's not a compliment to her.
Like, shave John's face and put a wig on him.
Yeah, excellent. Obviously, I had some downtime and he asked me, hey, you want to work with me while you're off or whatever? And there was definitely growing pains, and I had a love-hate relationship with the whole process of building, learning, all that kind of stuff. And the modeling industry can be crazy and a little intense, and it's almost therapeutic to go back into the shop and just start building something, you know, and it's almost like downtime.
Well, I'm curious, Travis, for someone else out there who might be interested in getting their child interested in building stuff, what do you think is a good entry point to get a child into this type of building?
As far as an age?
Well, or just a project or a skill, you know, or did you just, you know, keep Chad around the job site?
Yeah, he was around the job site. And then when we got in the shop, I did all the cutout, and then I would go over with Chad how everything's, you know, kind of went together. So that's kind of how you start out, is you kind of have to learn how everything goes together in order to know how to cut it out.
Yeah, I think about with our oldest is 8, and, you know, I've actually gotten her involved in just little kind of like assembly projects, I guess I'd say, like putting together even a piece of IKEA furniture.
Oh, yeah.
Just getting a sense of how parts form a whole, so that she might be able to start to think about how pieces come together. Because I'm not quite ready to put her in front of like a nail gun or a saw at age 8.
Yeah.
But I like hearing what you said about like just understanding how the pieces fit together is the sort of foundation for understanding how you might build something yourself once you get older.
Right. That's kind of how I did it with Chad. And I mean, it's to the point that I can just take something into the shop and Chad's on it. It's just he can build anything we take in there.
We have a lot of people who follow along who do a lot of, you know, DIY projects, whether it's furniture building or cabinet building. And I wonder, as people who do it professionally, if you have any number one tip for how people can make their DIY projects a bit more professional.
Or like a tool that you recommend that might not be as obvious that like helps you get a really finished look.
I always go back to sanding and finish. And it's a little tedious at times, you know, if you have to hand sand something, or, you know, if you don't have an orbital sander or something like that. But just focus on, you know, the grit of paper you're using, what type of finish you want. You know, if you get some rough sawn white oak that you want to keep all this natural grain and all the natural curves that came from the mill, then you just want to get a piece of 80 grit on an orbital sander and knock the edges off and stain it and finish it.
I will say that it's not always the tool. I would compare it to somebody that really knows how to cook. You can put the same ingredients on a counter with somebody that really knows how to cook and somebody that really doesn't know how to cook, and they both have the same ingredients and it won't turn out the same.
My brother-in-law says that a lot. He's a photographer, not to take it back to the modeling thing, but he says the most frustrating question is when people say, oh, what camera do you use? You must have a really good camera.
Yeah.
And his point is like, no, it's not about the equipment I have. I mean, it is nice, but it's the way of manipulating the light and having the right setting and the way you use the tool that gets him the product that is professional.
Exactly.
That's dead on.
Well, and I like what you said, Chad, about the finish and the sanding, because I find for myself that's the part of the project where I start to get impatient, because it's like it's built and I just want to be done
exactly.
with it. So like,
yeah,
let's call it a day and say it's good enough.
Yeah,
not that we haven't done that, but
just not for any clients, right?
Yeah, we've held to a pretty high standard in most of the stuff that we do, so we really have to be on our game.
You know, we also wanted to ask you guys if there was some kind of piece of furniture or something that you need, because we'd be up for building you guys something and hauling it out there.
So we could meet, Chad?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's the best.
Yeah, Sherry doesn't care what it is. She just wants to
see
you.
I just want you to bring it. So you have to come all the way over with like a picture frame or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe just a set of picture frames and we'll put a picture of us together.
Yes, we'll take a picture of Chad and John for the frame.
I'm sure that doesn't really put your skills to work.
No, it'd still be fun.
Well, I had a little fun game that I wanted to play just to wrap this up. And it's really fast because I want to know how much you guys really have in common. So it's like the newlywed game, but it's the John and Chad game. And I asked John all the questions first. So I have John's answers. And I'm going to see how many of Chad's answers align with John's answers.
Oh, man.
Okay.
So I said the same thing.
John's very excited about this.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. The beach or the mountains?
Mountains.
I knew you'd say that. John's beach.
Yeah.
Okay, next question is pizza or sushi? And I know they're both wonderful, but you have to pick.
Pizza.
Yeah, that's what John said.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. What's your birthday? We've had some questions that you might be born on the same day. I don't believe that's true.
July 14th.
Oh, November 15th. How many kids do you have?
Two boys.
John has two, but one's a girl and one's a boy. Favorite type of saw?
Favorite type of saw?
He's probably going to say something I've never heard of.
John has a very favorite saw.
I mean, it's got to be table saw. I'm on it all the time.
John's miter saw.
We make a good pair.
Yeah, you guys would work well together because you're not exactly alike, but you're similar.
Yeah, that's teamwork. I can cut all the sheets up, and then John can put all the face frame on.
And then the last question is just for fun. Given your underwear modeling, is it boxers or briefs?
For what I do, it's got to be briefs. I have to wear a lot of skinny jeans.
See, John's like, I'm boxer briefs. So he went halfway.
You know, I will say, and I want to touch on the Tommy John thing. I'm wearing some boxer briefs right now.
For Travis's sake, I hope it's more than just the boxer briefs.
Seriously, that's all he's got on right now.
Yeah.
He's under contract, right?
Yeah. But yeah, my good family over at Tommy John wants to give all the listeners a discount code. If they want to go to TommyJohn.com and use the code YHL.
No way!
Yeah.
This is the first time we've had an underwear discount code. Guys, we've had tool discount codes. We've had discount codes for decorating stuff.
Yes, they have women's as well. And look, I haven't tried on the women's underwear, but this old Bronco next to me right here. Hey, Dad, tell them about the women's underwear. No, oh my goodness.
I'm waiting for the old Bronco to speak.
You should have seen his face. I might cry. But seriously, those people over there are my absolute favorite clients. And yeah, they're growing out of control.
Well, now I have a surprise for John, because in the mail, Chad sent you some underwear. So now you guys not only share your looks, but you share underwear.
Oh my gosh. That's so great. You guys are so great. I appreciate the invite to the podcast. It's been loads of fun. And I hope to see you guys at some point up there in Virginia.
We would love it. You made our day, and we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
Thanks, guys.
So if you guys didn't check out the show notes already, go to younghouselove.com/podcast and we'll put links to Chad's Instagram and also he and his dad's construction company, Rhodey Construction. They do great stuff. So if you're in the Dallas area, maybe check them out in person.
Yeah, get Chad to build you a table or something.
And next up I'm digging a new paint tool that helped us a lot on something we did recently at the duplex. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
So we've talked in the past weeks about how much we love all the beautiful furniture and inspiration you can find in Room & Board. I've been getting their catalog for years, and they're actually this week's sponsor. But one thing we really haven't talked much about are their free design services.
Yeah, and two things really stuck out to me when they were telling us about them. First is that Room & Board really wants the shopping experience to be no pressure. Like, we've talked about how they don't do discount codes or sales because they want people to be able to take their time when they shop. And that's why they don't offer their design associates any commission, because they don't want you to work in this pressured environment where you feel like someone's just trying to push product on you. They want you to be able to make the right decision for your house.
Right. They will literally just sell you the things you need, not more, and they will help you work with your existing furniture. So let's say all you need is some art, some pillows, some accessories. That's not too low of a budget for Room & Board. You can call them up and they can help you with just that.
Yeah, that's the other thing that stuck out to me is that they will do any range of project, whether you're looking just to finish off a space or you're starting from scratch and you need help with everything from floor planning to paint colors. Like, you can walk in with photos and measurements and they will help you construct an entire room if you need it.
Yeah, and it's totally free. Like $0. Walk into Room & Board and start planning your room.
So if you guys want to set up an appointment with a design associate today at Room & Board, you can hit up roomandboard.com/YHL. That's roomandboard.com/YHL. You can make an appointment online or you can find your closest store and just walk in. The thing I'm digging this week is very similar to something I dug several episodes ago, but this has a slight improvement to it. What I'm digging this week are these removable decals that you can use to test paint colors. The ones that we use are called Spot On. They're sold at Lowe's. I'll put a link to them in the show notes. And they're very similar to something I talked about a long time ago. It was kind of a Kickstarter campaign called Samplize, where you could order removable decals that were painted in test swatches that you wanted to test out. And so this is a very similar thing, except this is a little bit of a DIY method, because you just buy these blank decals off the shelf and then you paint them yourself. So the improvement is you have a lot more color options, because I think the Samplize ones just have like Benjamin Moore and certain Sherwin-Williams colors, like the colors we wanted to test when we were trying to figure out the shutters for the duplex were HGTV Home colors by Sherwin-Williams, which were not in the Samplize catalog. So this was a great solution. The decals come in like a 3-pack for about $4. So it's a little over $1 per decal. Obviously, you have to buy the test paint as well. But I think our testers were like, what, $4 or $5?
Yeah, they're really cheap. Those little ones, maybe $4.
Yeah, so you're looking at maybe like $5 or $6 per decal to test, which is about the same cost as Samplize. I think those are $5 plus shipping. So I'm not saying don't use Samplize if you want to check them
out. If they have the color you want, yeah, go for it.
I mean, you do have to wait for them to create it and ship it. So if you're in a rush like we were, going to the store might be a faster thing. But here's the reason why I like either option is these decals were great. I was able to paint them at night on our kitchen table after the kids had gone to bed.
And they're huge, you guys. They're like the size of a piece of paper. So versus a little test square that you get from the store, they're like 500 times bigger than
that. Yeah, they're basically an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and they are removable. So like, we painted 5 of them and we stuck them up on the Hardy Plank siding. You know, I wouldn't have painted that siding because we were leaving it white, but I wanted to put it in the place where a shutter would go so I could see it next to the window and the white trim and all that. So it was nice to be able to put it right in the spot we wanted to test it. And then we were able to peel them off and move the same ones over to the doors because we wanted to look at them on the doors as well. So I really liked that in like this course of 10 or 15 minutes, we were able to test them in several places rather than having to actually paint multiple test swatches on different parts of the house or whatever, which is what we've done in the past. And plus, then you also have like having to sand and paint over it later.
Right. There's nothing to cover up later because they peel right off. It made it so simple.
My only beef with them is that one of them blew off at one point. It fell in the dirt and it got very sticky on the back and it was hard to rehang. But I guess that was more user error than it was
an issue.
But my real beef is I just wish they had a better way of labeling them. Like, if there was a little section that you could write, easily on it. I, like, with a pen, I kind of scrawled like an abbreviation of the color. Like, the color we picked was called Pale Patina, so I wrote pee-pee in the corner.
Nobody puts pee-pee in the corner.
Look what I did there. And so it wasn't the perfect system because it was hard to write over the paint. That's the only thing I
would
change about
it. But you know what?
It.
I would just say don't paint the whole swatch. Paint 90% of the swatch, leave it white on the bottom, and just write on it.
Yeah, but the surface wasn't easy to write on. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a little bit slick, but it takes the paint. Also, do two coats.
Yep.
You can't do one cheap, flimsy coat and then judge it, because two coats is a much better depth of color, and then you'll see the true color as it will look on the shutters or whatever you're painting.
Anyways, I'll put a link in the show notes. They're called Spot On Removable Decals. We got them at Lowe's.
And what I'm digging this week is actually something, there was some foreshadowing involved. I mentioned in one of our email newsletters, I think maybe a few weeks back, that I was looking for floats for the beach house because it's really fun. That shallow ocean, floats are allowed, and people just sit in like a big swan or a big donut. But they're so cumbersome, those big inflatable ones, to either blow up or carry the 3 blocks from the house to the beach, that I've been looking for something that's a little bit easier, and I found it. And they're called spring floats. If I describe them, I think you'll know what I mean, but I'll also put a link to them in the show notes because I love this specific brand. It won some sort of award because a piece of paper fell out when I unwrapped it.
The floaties. It's like the Oscars, but for pool floats.
But anyway, it's basically like a mesh oval.
Here's what I'm going to do. You know those things that you put babies in? Like, we had one of these for our kids that it was...
Nope.
What? This is the perfect analogy because a lot of people use these.
No, but I can't remember the name of it.
I think it might have been the same brand, but it was like...
No.
What?
Rock and Play Sleeper. That's what it's called.
No, I'm talking about for the pool.
Oh. Like, you put their little legs in it and they're mesh and they have like a ring that's inflatable.
Exactly.
Okay, so picture a really big oval of mesh and a ring around that that's inflatable, and it's for grown-ups and or children. But the coolest thing about it is it sort of spirals around itself and goes in this tiny container. So it's like maybe the size of a Frisbee, maybe a little bit bigger than a Frisbee. And it even has a shoulder strap. So it's so easy to carry these two. We bought two big ovals, but they go over my shoulder. They're lighter than a purse. And then when we get there, you only have to inflate the ring, which takes about 5 blows.
Okay, that's a weird measure. You have to do the pillow also. There's a little head pillow, but that's just maybe an additional 5 blows.
10 blows, guys.
They're like, I'm going to just describe the folding mechanism again. You know, like those sun shields you put in your windshield sometimes when you park your car in the summer and you don't want it to get hot inside.
So nobody uses those.
But they know what they are. Those things that kind of like flip out.
Right. This is the sound.
Oh, we should just end this podcast before it goes off the rails anymore.
Bye, guys. Talk to you next week.
We'll put a link in the show notes to the spring floats. We promise.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
Should I try to do like a Chad voice for the end of this?
I think you should do a little twang.
Okay. No, that wasn't it.
That was not it. That reminds me. John and Chad have one more thing in common, you guys. Not only do they both have 2 kids, their kids have the exact same first initials, C and T. How crazy is that?
It's so crazy. Anyways, please keep telling us what you do while you listen.
Like Emily on Instagram, who listened during a stressful dental appointment. She said my Shakira impression made her laugh out loud in front of the dentist. So, la 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 la.
Back on track again. Please check out younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus info, links, and photos from this episode, like a look at the tile at the beach house and a link to the removable paint decals.
And all those pictures of Chad and John side by side.
Oh, just not in underwear, okay?
Everyone said, John's modeling underwear, why aren't you talking about it?
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. That's the hardest thing to say.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. I can't. Spoiler, it was not me.